Hello, everybody, and welcome
to Ghoul Society.
That's my little sister, Sarah.
And that's my big sister, Jamie.
We are grateful to be recording on the unceded, stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations, and the Lekwungen and Wissanich peoples, whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests on this land, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
Yeah.
I drank last night. You can probably hear it in my voice.
You drank, I drank, we all drank.
We had a party for our friend and it was really fun, a birthday party. And we drank margaritas. But like, they were in a glass this big that I'm holding up about 4 inches, and they were doubles, and they were good. And then I demolished the first one. I was just like chug, and I was like, I'm ready for my second one. And but then like, it hit me so hard.
Yeah.
And then I was also drinking a Negroni.
Oh my God.
And then her dog got sick, and then they had to leave. And then everyone was like leaving, and we were like, okay, I guess we're done. And Bristol was also so tipsy. It was really funny. And our friend kept giving him water.
Uh-huh.
They were like, here's some water. It was really fun. And we tried to play Killer Kittens. Killer Bunnies, sorry.
Oh, Killer Bunny.
And I was confused pretty much the whole time, but I think I understand it.
Oh.
I would want to play again. Anyway, so that was my night. It was really fun.
Wow, nice. We went to Irish Times, and they have those drop blends that are beer and cider mix.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I got the White Summer one. The one that mom had at my birthday.
Oh.
It was so good. And so I ordered it. I was like, this is what I'm going to have. Because known fact about me, I hate beer. But this year, something's changed.
Something's changed in you.
Just a little bit. Anyway, so I ordered it. And then they were like, what is it? And I told them. And they sipped it. And they were like, oh my God, that's so good. And then we all ended up getting them.
I love that.
We got a second one, too. And they were delicious.
Yummy.
They're so good.
Oh, and so I guess it's not like it's not less alcohol because it's cider mixed with beer. It's not beer mixed with like juice, right? I see.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. That was really good. And then Montana and I went home and got pizza. And then we watched.
Like Domino's or what?
Yeah, we got Domino's.
Nice.
And then we watched two of the Batman, like Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy movies.
Wow.
Because Montana was like, have you ever seen them? And I was like, no. So then we watched the first one and the second one. Then maybe today we'll watch the third one.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting.
It was really good.
Love it.
Yeah. And now are you going to depress us with your story? Or
actually, it's
is
like,
it a good, is it happy or sad?
Both?
No.
Things can be multiple things.
Two things can be true at the same time.
Stories contain multitudes, Sarah. Okay, let us begin. Greenwich Village, New York, 1911. At the time, it was thought to be the American Bohemia. Groups of radical intellectuals, mainly artists, activists, and journalists, flocked to Greenwich Village and worked hard to make it their safe haven. It was mainly populated by immigrant communities who were progressive thinkers, movers, and shakers. Before Greenwich Village was Greenwich Village, the Canarsie, Munsee Lenape, and Wappinger peoples stewarded Manhattan, now known as Manhattan. These contemporary and ancestral homelands were never ceded to the crown, and the indigenous groups of this area were violently displaced over the course of 400 years. Despite this, these sovereign nations and communities are still thriving in Manhattan, as New York has the largest urban indigenous population in the U.S. Additionally, Black and immigrant communities are the foundation on which the city was built, the whole country, as we know, both through obscene violence toward these communities from white settlers, and also after that, and kind of during it as well, through their own personal agency, resilience, strength, and self-determination. Now, all that kind of groundwork being laid, let's get back to Greenwich Village in 1911. One of the main employers of this Bohemia was the garment industry. At this time, it was booming, and the trendiest item in fashion that was popular among all social classes due to its comfort and style were shirtwaists.
Shirtwaists?
Yeah.
What the fuck is a shirtwaist?
Okay.
Is it a shirt you wear on your waist?
No. It's a blouse and it like wraps around your waist. It's like such a vibe.
Oh.
I'm showing Sarah pictures.
Oh, those.
Yeah, these.
That's what they look like?
Yeah.
Well, I've only ever seen the top part.
Yeah, that's fair.
I've never seen actually the wrap part because it's not sticking out of the skirt.
True.
Oh, pretty.
Yeah, they're super pretty.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. Kind
of the same one, but yeah, so.
$1.
$1. Six wonderful waist values. Your choice. $1. That's what it says.
Today?
Okay, one sec. $35.05.
Oh.
So, not that expensive.
Not even that bad.
I really like this one.
Whoa.
It's kind of giving me wedding dress to look like.
That's so pretty.
The smocking is crazy. I do not understand. I guess they had like smocking machines. Anyways. Okay, now you know what a shirtwaist is. Many of the shirtwaist garment operations were actually ran by these two main guys, Isaac Harris and Max Black. Because of this, they were known as the shirtwaist kings.
Damn.
And they were also really scummy.
Did they run that town?
Kinda.
Yeah.
We're gonna run this town tonight. So, a typical day had around 500 workers. Many between the ages of 14-year-old to 20-year-old, and this was kind of like in each specific like factory, you know? There's like 500 workers kind of per factory is the vibe that's going on. And decisions were made, like the factories that Max and What's-His-Face owned. What's-His-Face? I just need to scroll up a little bit. Isaac. Whatever, they're assholes. It doesn't really
matter. Who cares?
Decisions were made that prioritized efficiency and productivity, and it was obvious that the shirtwaist kings were in it for the profit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was also nearing the end of the Industrial Revolution, when workers were still beginning to slowly unionize to fight for shorter work hours, more pay, and obviously safer working conditions. But in this year of 1911, things were still pretty bad. Mm-hmm. So doors would be locked from the outside to prevent workers from taking breaks or leaving early. Pay was relatively low. It was about $3.50 to $6.50 an hour, which to me...
That was low in 1911?
Yeah, I know. I'm a little bit confused because if $1 is 35, let's see. $3.50. $100. Maybe they meant, maybe when I read that.
A day?
Maybe
a week.
Yeah. Because it's $121.
A week.
It must be. A week. Yeah.
Because that, like, even that was $400.
Maybe they mean in today's buying power. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it'd be like reverse. So it'd be like 10 cents an hour or something.
Oh.
Like $3.50
yeah.
an hour in today's money. That's what I'm assuming. Right. Sorry. Probably, yeah, definitely because, they weren't making that much.
Yeah, because even I feel like $100 a week in 1911, wouldn't that be quite a bit? Or no?
Yeah,
cause that's it would like, be. Yeah, because that's like $400 a month.
Yeah, they probably were making 10 cents an hour.
Okay,
that makes more sense. Because that's $3 an hour in today's money.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, I think so too. So during a 13-hour day, which is crazy because I complain about like 8 hours, not even.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't complain. I really love my job. During a 13-hour day, workers were sometimes allowed one 30-minute break if the schedule of the garment operation allowed it. However, this was not possible during busy seasons.
What was busy season? Like when a new style came out?
Yeah, probably. Mm. Yeah. So like fall, spring.
Right.
All the, just always.
Yeah.
But eventually, garment workers organized a strike. They wanted shorter 52-hour work weeks, a 20% increase in pay, and they wanted pay for overtime.
Hell yeah.
Among other things like washrooms.
Oh.
And coat rooms. And maybe not being locked in.
Yeah.
So on one awesome day, 20,000 workers walked out. This started 3 months of demonstrations. There were smaller and medium factories that agreed. So like the kind of lower end of the factory, not lower end, but like the mom and pop shop style right. factories. They were like, okay, we agree with you. You can work shorter hours. You can be paid more. But the larger factories,
we're
such
like,
as the
hell no.
Yeah, such as the one that the Shirtwaist Kings owned, they did not.
Right.
The 20 largest factories of garment industry got together. And they made an association so that the strikers could not like actually strike and unionize. They made like an anti-union coalition, essentially.
Okay.
They also formed alliances with police mm-hmm. to physically beat and fight against the strikers and demonstrators.
Right.
They were like, fuck you, we don't care, get lost kind of thing.
And they're women, so that probably doesn't help.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, I can just do whatever I want with you.
So in February of 1910, the strike ended. Some demands were met, others were prevented by the coalition of the large factory owners. Mm-hmm. However, regardless, garment workers slowly went back to work since they didn't really have another choice, right?
Right.
They're just like, okay. Well, we need money, we have to work, and times are really rough. Now, March 25th, 1911, at 4:40 in the Ash Building. The Triangle Waste Company factory is located on floors 8 through 10 of this building.
Oh, I think I know what this story is.
She finally got it.
I was like...
She's like, shirt waist? What is going on?
Classic Jamie talking about garments any given time, any textile,
historical
anything.
Clothing.
And then now I think I get it.
Now you get it.
Now I think I remember. This one is sad.
It'll be okay. It is sad, but then it's happy.
Right.
Well, it's cool. Well, it's hot, actually. Okay, it was over 100 years ago. It's fine, Tatiam. So, there's this really cool woman, Yetta Lubitz. She's working her daily grind like any other day. It was her 17th week of working at the factory. At 24 years old, she was a seasoned survivor of the workplace, the master of a quick getaway. So she was just good at being like, work's done, see ya.
Right.
Peace out, scurry out of there.
Oh, yeah.
On the afternoon of March 25th, after receiving her pay, she slipped out of her seat in the center of the room and headed for the cloak closet to grab her jacket and hat. When she was leaving the dressing room, she noticed others were rising from their seats as well, but they weren't heading to the dressing rooms. Quote, I saw a crowd of girls run right toward the Green Street door, which quickly became crammed with people struggling to exit. For a second, she didn't understand what was going on until she heard someone yell, fire.
Mm-hmm.
The flames had reached the 9th floor at the same moment that this person had cried out. So all of this information that I'm sharing with you is actually from the book called Triangle, The Fire That Changed America mm-hmm. by author Dave Von Drill. He writes, quote, one floor below, flames had spread to the two cutting tables near the air shaft in the rear corner of the factory, where they were driven and fed by a steady rush of wind making its way from street level through the elevator shaft. These rear tables were the entire width of the room away from the fire starting point, but the blaze was carried across the room in light, swirling embers that fell amid perfect conditions for a fire. Very quickly, the swing of the fire was extremely intense. It burst the rear windows and entered the air shaft. The shaft worked like a flue, sucking the fire upward, which is why a scant moment after Lubitz heard the word fire, she saw the blaze through the air shaft windows.
Whoa.
End quote. So to kind of give you a bigger picture, which we'll get into a little bit later, Lubitz is on the 9th floor.
Mm-hmm.
The fire started on the 8th floor.
Yeah.
So right. The flames immediately are coming up through the air shaft into the 9th floor.
Right.
Another worker ran to Lubitz, and together they ran to the fire escape. Quote, I followed her and I ran to the fire escape too. And then a whole crowd of girls came over right to us. So many girls. They ran to the window, to the fire escape, but I got scared. All the floors were with flames. End quote. Now at this time, Lubitz didn't know where to go. The fire escape was full of flames, the door was jammed, and everyone was chaotically trying to find a way to escape the burning building. As the seconds ticked on, windows shattered and the fire encroached the 9th floor from every single direction. From the floorboards underneath, the windows, like from the stairs, from the air shaft, from the fire escape.
Yeah.
Lubitz noticed workers heading back to the Green Street door. And at the time, she didn't know that another worker had come down from the 10th floor and shouted for the people trapped to come up to the roof.
Mm.
Evading burning baskets and overturned chairs, Lubitz used her long coat to cover her face as she ran through the thick smoke to reach the door, but the crowd ahead of her had already gone through. So upon opening the door, she's confused because she's like, I don't understand. I saw this crowd going to the door.
Right.
Because the worker yelled down at them from the 10th floor, but by the time she got over there, they're gone.
Right.
She doesn't see anyone. And she's like, I don't understand, like, why would I go up? Because I'm just going to get more trapped. And I can't go down because there's flames. So she's like, okay, I'm just going to shut the door. Because I don't fucking know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know where everyone went.
Yeah.
And in that moment, she decided that it must be her fate to die in the Triangle Factory.
Oh my gosh.
However, all of a sudden, described like an angel in the book, Lubitz's friend, Annie Gordon, reached the door along with several other women and shouted at Lubitz to come to the roof. On the roof, waiting for them, were two law students, last names Kremer and Contour, from the neighboring building, who had tied two ladders together to form a bridge between the buildings, enabling the women to get to safety.
Yes!
Yeah, crazy. So Lubitz thought that this whole situation that she was trapped in took about 20 minutes, when in reality, the whole experience from when the first person yelled fire to when she reached safety was no more than 5 minutes.
Oh my God. It's like a matchbox.
Yes. Yeah. Literally.
Or like when a woodmill catches on fire because of all the dust and everything, and it just goes up. Yeah.
Or like a flour mill too.
Yeah.
Like crazy. Yeah. Also because like there's also a lot of dust in garment factories. Like even when I'm sewing, so much dust will accumulate and just like little pieces. And they're probably using cotton at this time. And cotton like kind of has a lot of dust coming off of it. Like poofy kind of bits from like scraps and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's Yetta Lubitz's experience, and that's from that book that I had mentioned. I just thought I would start with her story, but this is kind of like what people think. So the fire was thought to have started in the scrap fabric bin on the 8th floor, either from someone throwing a match or a cigarette into it
that wasn't smoking,
fully
right?
put out. Yeah.
I forgot they were all smoking.
So smoking was actually not permitted
because
obviously it's like super dangerous and everything is flammable. But workers often snuck cigarettes and matches during their shift.
Yeah.
Because of course it's like the end of the 1800s still kind of, even though it's the turn of the century, it's still just like, whatever. So it's a very real possibility that someone just threw like a cigarette or a match into the bin. However, a New York Times article suggested that the fire was started by actually the engines that were running the sewing machines.
Okay.
So that's another theory. And then another series of articles pointed to a potential insurance fraud, which I'll touch on later, because there was a pattern of arsons within garment factories.
Oh, okay.
So they tried to stop the initial spread of the flames on the eighth floor.
Mm-hmm.
But get this, the fire hose that they had on site was rotted and rusted. And it just didn't work.
Freaking classic.
This is like the story with the life jackets that had metal in them.
Yeah. It's like, check your fucking fire hoses, bro.
Does no one care about the well-being of others? Actually, no one does.
No.
It's so true. It's crazy. A bookkeeper on the 8th floor was able to warn the 10th floor through a connected telephone, but there was no phone on the 9th floor.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah. The main chaos, as noted by Lubitz, happened all on the 9th floor because that's where most of the garment workers were.
Right.
The workers panicked and they looked for means of escape. Some rushed to the single elevator, which could only hold 12 people at a time, all squished together wall to wall. And unfortunately, the elevator actually broke down after 4 trips of going up
because
and down.
Because it was so heavy? Because it was like...
Because the fire was just like burning everything. Yeah. However, during those 4 trips, the elevator operator risked his life each time to ensure more lives could be saved by facing the fire head on each time he went back up.
Wow.
Because there's has to be an operator. It's not an automatic one, right? So he's like, well, there's a fucking fire, but here I go back up to fucking 8 floors above me, 9 floors.
Right.
Which is so crazy. So because of little to no building codes and the shirtwaist kings that didn't care, there was no sprinkler system in the building at all either. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if buildings had sprinkler systems at this time.
Yeah,
anyways.
When were they even invented?
Maybe they didn't even have running water. Who knows? This is 1911. I think some buildings probably did, but these guys are just like, yeah, whatever, fuck it. Inspectors told the owners to make another elevator in case of emergencies, and also just to like lessen the load on the single elevator that they had for all of the people that were working. But this was ignored, as well as an additional fire escape that they told them to build was also not built.
Mm.
Even though the fire escape was like obviously in rough condition.
Right.
As people fled from the fire, they pushed up against doors, which were either locked, as we discussed earlier, or they only opened inward, which obviously became a problem because people were piled up against the doors, and then they couldn't open it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's all really scary and a big mess. Those inside were running out of ways to escape. Many used the fire escape outside until it was overloaded and collapsed due to lack of support.
How many women were on each floor?
I think on this day, I think there was actually only on that. I actually don't know the floors specifically, but I think that there was only about like 300 or 250 people at work.
Okay.
Like on that day, because I think it was also was the Sabbath. So like
A
lot of people weren't there.
Right.
And I think it was a Saturday, so it's not as busy as, like, a weekday, potentially.
Right.
But still, that's, like, a lot of people over 3 floors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think most of them were on the 9th floor. Like, I think the sewing machines were on the 9th floor.
Oh,
I don't necessarily know about the 8th and the 10th.
Right. So each floor kind of was its own part. Yeah. Of
like there was
the
probably a
process.
Cutting floor,
sewing
floor, ironing, finishing floor, that kind of stuff. Yeah. As firefighters arrived, they tried to extend their ladders to rescue people from the windows.
Mm-hmm.
But the ladders only reached to the 6th floor.
Mm. Oh my God.
So you go and you make these buildings and you don't consider that your other infrastructure is not cut out for your buildings.
Right.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah. Oh, so here is a quote from an 18-year-old named Nellie Ventura. They said, I ran at once to the window, opening on the fire escape on the 9th floor, and cried to the other girls to follow me. I don't know what happened then, but I stepped out on the ladder and looked down. All below me was thick smoke with red tongues of flame showing through at the 8th floor. At first, I was too frightened to try and run through the fire, for I thought I would be burned to death. When I heard the screams of the other girls and heard the roar of the fire in the back of me, I knew I had to go down that ladder or die there.
Damn.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
So she is just like, I don't have a choice. Here I go. And of course, people turned to jumping out of windows.
Yeah.
Firefighters set up nets for people who jumped.
Oh, that's good.
But unfortunately,
they didn't work.
This option soon failed.
Why? Did their nets break or something? Are they bad at catching people?
Too many people were jumping on the netting, and the netting eventually broke.
Oh my god, bro.
I know.
Like,
it's the 1800s of it all.
What do you mean your netting broke?
I know.
How old is your net?
How old is your net?
Like, you're supposed to be life-saving.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're supposed to have life-saving things, and you can't even do your fucking job?
No. I think they're just like, yeah.
Was this like the bad. First year of firefighters or something?
Actually, that's when a great
firefighters invented? I know it was a long-ass time ago, but I feel like by the early 1900s, it's not even the very early 1900s. It's been 1900 for quite a while.
You don't even want to know. The first colonial fire. Okay, this is Google AI, so I don't know. I think it's from Wikipedia. Wikipedia. All wives under the sea. The first colonial fire wardens and bucket brigades were appointed in the Dutch settlement of New Amsterdam in 1648.
Okay, New York. You have your shit together by then.
In 1737, the colonial government officially established the first organized volunteer fire department.
Okay, it's been 200 years. It's been 200 years. You should know that nets break down over time.
By 1865, the modern paid full-time professional force, now known as the FDNY, Fire Department of New York, was created by the state with the formation of the Metropolitan Fire Department. Yeah, so like they've been being paid for 50 years by this time.
And you can't even fucking save these women? First of all, your ladder's too goddamn short.
Yeah, that's weird. You've been working on this for, a couple hundred years.
And also, like, hello, you're in, like, New York, so the buildings
are tall.
Have been taller than six stories for probably a long ass time.
Yeah, it's true.
So you, what?
You don't have any excuse, really.
No.
You just fucked up.
Yeah.
You fucked up. Fix your nets.
Fix your nets and fix your fucking ladders.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
Or like, I don't know, grab a ladder, put it on the side of the building, climb up, bring those girls down.
It's true.
That's your job.
Do your job. Don't leave it up to law students.
Yeah.
Or why don't you connect another ladder to your ladder? The law kids did it.
I
don't understand. Anyway, who knows? Who knows? Maybe they tried their best. Listen, I like firefighters. I don't want to hate on firefighters.
Yeah, but this is just sad.
This is sad. It is. So even though the nets broke, people kept jumping
as
it was their only escape.
Yeah.
Around 50 of the deaths were people who jumped onto the streets below and died. A newspaper reporter on the scene, William Shepherd, described the sounds he heard of human bodies hitting the pavement as, quote, thud dead, end quote, a very specific sound that would be obviously super horrible to hear.
Yeah.
Overall, 129 girls and women died, along with 17 men. Burnt bodies were laid in coffins, and these coffins lined the streets so family and friends could come by to claim the body of their loved ones. However, 150 survivors were rescued by the quick-thinking law students on the roof, as well as those who were able to escape via the elevator thanks to the elevator operator, or the stairs mainly from the 8th floor. It was quickly all over. Mourning and outrage turned to organizing, and on April 5th, 1911, 1,000 people followed in the funeral procession. Some suggest that upwards of 350,000 people attended the procession, like attended the funeral to pay the respects.
Wow.
Now, the outcome of all of this. Unions were among the first to demand justice, of course, including the International Ladies Garment Workers Union. Union leader Rose Schneiderman stated, "I would be a traitor to those poor burned bodies if I came here to talk good fellowship. Too much blood has been spilled. I know from my experience it is up to the working people to save themselves. The only way they can save themselves is by a strong working class movement." So the union workers are like, fuck all y'all. This is stupid. This should have never happened. We are fighting here.
Yeah.
Frances Perkins, who witnessed the fire and saw young people jump to their deaths, worked to bring change at the executive level. She declared that this was the day that a New Deal was born. She was the first woman to serve in the cabinet in FDR's cabinet as Secretary of Labor. She passed worker protections on a national level, like the Fair Labor Standards Act. She set standards for minimum wage, child labor, overtime pay, and such other things and protections.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, she's really cool. The Factory Investigating Commission was formed at the end of June. Through their work, they created 30 different labor laws, which through time led to the current labor laws in the states. So the union people are striking. They're like, fuck you, we're not going to work until you guys figure this out. Frances Perkins, she's in the office. She's like, here we go. She's in the cabinet. She's making these new laws. All the while, the Factory Investigating Commission was formed because they're like...
What year is this? Because that's pretty... I feel like that's pretty crazy for a woman to be so... That's the same year?
Yeah. So on April 5th was the funeral procession. And by June, like, not all of these things were happening immediately, but it was like, let's get going.
Damn.
Like, let's do this.
God. Go, girl.
So it was a few months.
Yep. Look at her go. She's so high up there with all those stupid men.
I know. Crazy. Yeah. I'm not exactly actually sure when Frances was like in the cabinet, but I know that the Factory Investigating Commission, they were like formed at the end of June. And I think that that helped so that she could like create laws.
Right.
Yeah. So 30 different labor laws were created, which through time led to the current labor laws that we still have in like in the States, and then also probably similarly in Canada as well. Yeah. I'm not actually entirely sure. Maybe there is a big historic tragic event that happened here too, but I mean, we're so like similar. I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, oh, let's just do it up here too.
Yeah.
Anyway, really, like, most of the labor laws that we see today stemmed from this major tragic historical event. And this case is huge in terms of not only the change of labor laws, but also building safety and the strength of unions as well. For example, in 1911, the average amount of workplace deaths per day was around 100. And this is in the States. Now, it was recorded in 2020 that the average workplace death per day is only 13.
Across the whole country?
Yes.
That's still a lot.
It's still a lot.
13.
I mean,
100 is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there's still like bad underground style factories.
Oh, yeah.
And like horrible fucking jobs that people shouldn't have to do. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense. But that's a huge like turnaround.
Yeah.
In 100 years. And all because mostly like unions and the change of labor laws.
Right.
So that's super cool. The owners of the Triangle were indicted. So our two guys, right?
Well, yeah.
And they stood trial for multiple counts of manslaughter.
Nice.
They were acquitted.
Fuck. God damn it. They didn't even have to do community service.
Well, no, they had to, however, navigate civil lawsuits for the next few years.
Yeah, good.
Which resulted in payouts that averaged around $75 per person. However, $75? Which I know, it's nothing.
Sorry you almost died and probably have, like, third-degree burns.
Yeah, but it's scarred. $75 in that time.
Here's $75.
Here, let's see. Wait.
I feel like that's not going to be, like...
I'm going to see. 1911, 2026, $75. Calculate. Yeah, $2,629.11. Yeah, it's nothing. And also, this is a disgusting part of it, too. Their insurance per person was much greater than their payouts. So overall, they claimed $60,000, which actually equaled to $400 per death. So they actually made a profit from the deaths of the fire.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I know.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's fucking gross. So some people started realizing that there were other fires that happened in factories which these two fuckers owned, leading people to believe that this was all actually part of a huge insurance fraud.
Right.
They also had notably inflated insurance policy for fire. Sorry, y'all. Listen, I'm really bad at talking today. It's fine. Just sit through it, okay?
So they did it on purpose.
So they might have done it on purpose. However, the court, like, they were tried for it, but the court didn't find any evidence for fraud or wrongdoing from Harrison and Black.
Right.
And eventually the court just dropped the fraud case because they were like, well, we don't really have evidence.
I guess you could just say that's like, it's a highly flammable environment. That's why our fire's insurance is so high.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. It's way too hard to prove, but I mean, it's kind of fucking sus. And the fact that they're making profit on people's deaths is disgusting. Yeah, that's
so awful.
Yeah. Now, the hauntings of this building. The Ash Building still stands.
What is it now?
It is now the New York University.
Oh,
and bro. It has been repurposed over the years. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's part of New York University, which is kind of fucking cool. So it's called the Brown Building, and it's now used by biology students who obviously study biology there. And I think those main floors where the Triangle Factory were in, 8, 9, and 10, are used as laboratories. So the sewing machines obviously have long been replaced by microscopes and various lab equipment.
Ooh.
Now, I didn't find, like, specific stories, but all I pretty much have to share with you is that many people describe a feeling of heaviness in the building, especially on the floors where the fire took place.
Mm-hmm.
Some report seeing wisps of smoke, struggling to breathe, or feeling as if they are choking on something.
Damn.
While others have seen apparitions of sooty women staggering or floating down the halls.
I just got chills.
I know. Super creepy. There are stories of doors being locked and then mysteriously unlocked.
Oh my God. Creepy.
Faces appearing in bathroom mirrors.
Oh.
Body-shaped shadows falling from windows.
Oh my God.
The sound of screams and the crackle of a fire.
Ugh. That's like all the worst.
Yeah. So hopefully people who fell from the windows are not actually reliving this loop of falling from the window to their death over and over and over again. And of course, we always hope that, like, everyone who passed away in this super, super tragic event are at peace now.
Yeah.
This event will be remembered in history forever because of how intense it was and how much change came about it.
Yeah.
And that is the story of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire.
That is so crazy.
I know. It's one I heard, like, so long ago.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, actually, I should do this. I feel like it would be really good.
Yeah. What a crazy story. That reminds me, actually, when I was out yesterday, one of my friends told me about when he was a kid in Scouts, and they had a sleepover in the Maritime Museum, in the old Maritime Museum.
Which was the old jail.
Yeah. In really? Fashion Square. Yeah.
Okay. Because when we were on our ghost walk, I did a ghost walk. And they were talking about the scouts who used to do sleepovers there.
Yes.
Tell me.
He was choked by a ghost. And he saw...
oh my God.
He saw Begbie, like, in the courtroom. And he, like, screamed at him to get out.
What?
Yes.
How old was he?
Well, I don't know. He's in scouts, so, like, little.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's so scary.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah, the scouts stopped doing sleepovers there because...
Yeah, he said... And he said he was on a ghost tour, and they went there. And then he, like, stopped the guide. He was like, that, like, what you're describing literally happened to me. Yeah, and one of
That's
his
crazy.
Yeah, and one of the other scouts like was dragged in his sleeping bag.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And
That's
I was
so
like,
crazy to be like on a ghost tour and be like, yeah, actually that was me.
Yeah.
That's my story. Hey. Yeah. Hey, I'm right here. That's so wild.
I know.
I was
like,
wondering
what
who
the
that
fuck?
Was.
Well, it happened Small to a towns. Lot of them.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I was like,
That's so cool.
Yeah, but when you said that people feel like they're being like choked or suffocated, I was like, oh my God, remember when my friend told me that story yesterday? And now everybody knows.
Crazy. Everyone knows. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
We hope that you have a beautiful, sunny Sunday or rainy or wherever you are.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, comments, concerns, critiques, you can email us at
ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com.
Also, send us your stories. Send us your stories. I feel like we need some stories, and then we can do some kind of like shorter, like share your stories episode, which would be really, really fun to do. So send us your stories.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow us on Instagram at
Ghoul Society Pod.
You can follow us on TikTok,
ghoul.societypod.
And you can find all of the episode's resources and trigger warnings in the description box below the episode. I think that's everything.
Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Bye. They met with owners of the 20...
Words are hard today.
The demonstrators met with owners of the 20th... Why am I doing so bad?
The 20th nobleman in the shirtwaist factories.
Fuck my life. The demonstrators met with owners of the 20 largest... That's why. It's just written bad. It's just written badly. That's why. Okay, cut all this out.
Past you. Typing. You're like, the good sentence. Present you. What the fuck?
Literally. 20 of the largest factories. Okay. The demonstrators met with owners of 20 of the largest factories and made an association. Oh, who met with them? Okay, this is what I'm trying to say.
The women?
No.